Greetings, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio. It's going to be an interesting few weeks here. There's so many things happening and so many things that are coming up. If you're not on our newsletter, I really suggest you sign up on the newsletter because we've covered a lot of this and we covered all the astrological impacts. I mean, we've got Mars going direct, we've got Uranus, we've got everything coming in to means there's going to be some major shakeups and a lot of changes, quick changes happening in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I know my guest Wentz and I have been in the middle of these changes and watching the ups and downs and all the craziness. So there's just so much going on. I was going to bring Wentz on so we can kind of clear up some of this stuff. But it's the news. It's just blowing me away, this fake news thing. 17 of the major agencies all said that there wasn't any Russian interference in the election. But the news agencies, the lamestream news, you know, that they're all saying there was, and they're attacking anybody who sides along with the 17 major agencies. And now they're getting some their own little people to step up and say, do an investigation, and they're really trying to push this Russian interference. It's the last ditch effort, anyway. So basically, they said the RNC was hacked and the DNC was hacked, and basically they found out the RNC was not hacked. So that's fake news right there. And the DNC, the leaks weren't coming from the Russians. They're actually coming straight from inside the DNC and people within the FBI and CIA that were just fed up with the Clintons and the nonsense that they were doing. So anyway, it's, you know, you just can't believe anything on the mainstream news right now. And they're really running for cover because the alternative media is just exposing them right and left for all the disinformation and the lying and deception going on. So basically, it's interesting to watch, you know, this all unfold. So you know, keep your eyes on this and be really wary of this no fake news, because the ones that are going to be censored are the ones that are giving you the truth, and the ones that have been lying to you are the ones that are going to be you know, have the pulpit. So anyway, pay attention to that. I don't want to go too much more into this. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of shifts and things happening, but I want to bring Winston on to talk about some of this. So Winston, are you with us?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, welcome to the show again.
Yeah.
You know, this is so crazy. I know you just wrote an email about gold and the role gold has played over the years in enslaving humanity and creating, you know, all the problems that we've been having so far. And I don't know if we should go into that. I'll just let you go wherever you want to go with this, and maybe we can talk about that. Or it'd be nice to also talk about where this gold is, you know, who's holding the gold, all the different accounts, because it's total crazy making when you try to figure out what's really going on with this global reset, you know, and the dinar and the zim and everything else. So maybe you can clear some of that up with this as well.
Well, yeah, I might be able to get a few ideas or shed a little bit of light on some of those circumstances. But let me, perhaps just for a fundamental concept, you know, address the problem of gold. I recently put an article that I sent out. The title of it was "The Tyranny of the Gold."
Yeah.
Now people might, you know, scratch their heads and say, well, you know, what in the world is he talking about? But if you'll go back in history and bring it up to our present time, I kind of lay the axe at the root. And that is that it seems like that the gold and how it has been used, or I should say how it has been misused, has created a tyranny, by my calculation, for at least 3,000 years. Uh-huh. So we're coming down here to the very end. When all these finances and money and all these kind of things are kind of going wacky, if I can use that term. But You know, someone might want to take just a few moments and visualize how our commerce or how our economies would run if we were not using gold. Now, one of the most successful currencies, certainly that we've had here in the United States, was colonial script. And it was not based on gold, it was based on commodities. And so, in other words, money or script was created based on some usable commodity, corn, beans, whatever. And then when the money was created to represent that commodity, as the commodity was used up, the script fell away. In other words, it only had a longevity as long as the real substance of value that it represented, as long as that was still intact, the money was there. But once the commodity was used up, then the money fell away. Now, so that was a very successful currency. It actually is what caused the Revolutionary War. Some of the historians and stuff can go back and review that. Certainly Benjamin Franklin said that was the cause of the Revolutionary War. It was not the Tea Party or the taxes and those kind of things. It was the Bank of England was trying to destroy the colonial script. Now, when we start to think about the concept of the tyranny of gold, sometimes you just have to step away and look at things from a different point of view to see this. But I've been watching this for such a very long time. And, you know, people get gold fever and wars are fought over gold and people hoard gold and all kinds of things as if they think it represents real value. The only real value for gold, at least in our world here, other places has other values. But in our world here, the only true value of gold is in electronic circuitry, fillings for teeth. I think some applications of gold as a healing or a medicinal type of substance, those things have been used successfully. Mm-hmm. But when you start to talk about gold as money, we seem to run into a few blocks here and there.
Yeah. It's I've seen over and over again the we're talking about gold fever, and we're joking earlier about that. I was calling it dinar fever and zim fever, and it's getting so crazy now. And there's so much information flying all over the place, and people getting angry and pissed and all this misinformation and false promises and everything. It's really hard to sort out, you know, what is what. Everything from this is a total scam to it's real and it's here for a higher purpose, you know, and it's backed by the higher dimensional beings. And, you know, it's from the top of the, from the low of the low to the highest of the highs, you know, is what seems to be going around the internet right now.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of excitement about all that. The way I see it, from my point of view, it seems to be that there may be more than one program in operation here. Mm-hmm. And then depending on which program finally has the ascendancy would determine how things work out with these questions about dinars and redemption of currencies and so forth. One thing is fixed, though, and everybody's in agreement on this, is that the global financial matrix has to be corrected. Otherwise, we're going back to the Stone Age. So however it gets fixed, whether these currencies are redeemed or whether they're not, the sum total of the program is that the total global financial matrix has to be, it has been corrected. Now, what people should probably be looking at more than some of these redemption of some of these currencies and so forth, perhaps what they should be concerning themselves more with would be the concept of Nisara or Gesara, representing the global effort that will be put into place. And when those elements are brought forward, then in essence, we'll have very, very little use for money anyway. Now, one of the programs, apparently, and I say apparently, had to do with what's called the revaluation of currencies. Now, that was an important step. That was worked on for, it's still being worked on. But that was really important to take away control of the central banks. All the central banks across the planet were privately owned, and they were manipulating the currencies to their advantage. And in essence, what they were doing, they were stealing the wealth of the countries by their manipulation of the currencies. So one of the purposes of the what's called the revaluation, or however the RV that people like to talk about, one of the major purposes for that was to rate a country's currency upon certain parameters. And once those parameters were determined, then a country's relative value of their currency would be fixed, so that it could not be manipulated by these central banks. So that perhaps has been the most important step that we've seen. I mean, there were a lot of other things that were a result of the RV, not just that. But to give fairness, equity across the planet, if we continue to use currency, and it may be that we won't be using that too much longer anyway, but in any event, the correction had to be made so that we could go into another system. Now, this system, you know, that I'm referring to here is what would be called a cashless system. For instance, For many who have communications with the ETs, you know, they're flying around the sky and whatnot, you know, they look at us like we're crazy. You know, what are you guys doing with money? What are you guys doing with banking? What are you guys, you know, they look at us like we're complete, you know, idiots. I guess we are. But actually, we have had the program to actually operate as a cashless society, certainly since 1933. However, that system was blocked, hidden. People were not informed of it. And in consequence of that, they did not know to use it. And then, for those of us who have discovered how that system was set up and how it should operate correctly, then we get a lot of pushback, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, I always tell people about, you know, if you've got a replicator and you can replicate whatever you want, and you've got, you know, fuelless energy, anti-gravity, counter-gravity, the whole universe is your back, is your playground, and all of your needs are being met, so why do you need money? I mean, these higher beings don't need money. A lot of them, some of them don't even need to eat because they're on a whole different frequency. But most Americans or most humans have a hard time even wrapping their head around that. But all that technology exists today. And the universe is abundant. Nature is totally abundant. And it's all, the lack is manufactured. And it's usually manufactured by these banksters. And that's the whole game, is to get rid of these guys and get the wealth back to the people.
Yeah, we've had a, you know, but in the defense of a lot of people on the planet, First off, here in our present existence, in what we call the third dimension or density, we have a variety of souls as far as their experiences, and that is we got some new ones here.
Yeah, yeah.
We got some that have been here quite a while, and we got some others that are very, very advanced. Uh-huh. So in defense of those who came on the planet for certain experiences, perhaps this money thing, all these kind of things are part of the experience which they contracted for. And I'm not going to, you know, take that experience away from them if that's what they need for their soul development. However, perhaps many of, or perhaps even most of, the listeners on this kind of broadcast and so forth are pretty advanced. And so as the planet changes, as we up our frequencies into some of these other higher frequencies and dimensions and so forth, we'll simply be able to create whatever it is we need without machines either. I think that the folks flying around through the sky they seem to be fifth dimensional or higher, and they can create whatever it is that they seem to need, you know, for their sustenance and so forth. And I was really interested. I've got a set of books that was written by an archaeological expedition that went in. They were going to go and do some digging around in the Gobi Desert, in those areas. But anyway, in course of their travels, that they came upon some of these higher developed individuals. We might call them ascended masters. But as they would have their meetings and gatherings and so forth, they could spread a table with a click of the fingers. You know? Oh, you want Thanksgiving turkey dinner? You know, snap your finger, there it is. And so they did have that ability, if they wanted to eat, I guess, to create those things. How they do it, I don't know yet, but I'm going to find out. But in any event, I think the course that many people are taking, especially like those who listen to these kinds of broadcasts, they're moving up in their frequencies, or, getting prepared to get into this concept of a fifth dimensional entity. And when you get to that level, you can just create whatever it is you want anyway. You don't even need a device.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when we start understanding, you know, I was listening to an article on YouTube where this guy was talking about the sun. And, you know, he said, you don't understand the sun at all. He said, the sun is not a big nuclear reaction going on. You know, it's not. He said, it's not at all. He said, that, as a matter of fact, there's nothing inside the sun. It's hollow. And that's when you see sunspots. And, you know, the big sunspots there are, it's going into the emptiness of the center of the sun, you know, which is really a doorway to another dimension. And he's saying what you're seeing is an energy exchange between another dimension and this dimension, and that's what creates the light. And you know, and I've always known that too. And the ETs said that too. If you could shield up and go through the sun, you'd go into a whole different dimension. And you know, massive ships are flying through the sun and coming into this dimension, and NASA knows about it. You know, they're fully aware of it, but they're not talking about it. But the thing is that when you understand that, like, everything on this dimension owes its existence to the next dimension above it. If you could somehow tap that other dimension, some people call it zero point, everybody has a different name for it, then you've got unlimited energy. And, you know, you're going to be a god, basically, because if you could do it through consciousness, you could manifest anything you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. If you start to think about the psychology behind that, once you get to the point, where you could create anything you wanted, you pretty soon get tired.
Yeah.
And you would not produce, a whole bunch of stuff you didn't need. In other words, your garage wouldn't be full of junk.
Exactly. Yeah, kind of like the Q, you know, you'd be running around the multiverses and probably causing problems. But it's kind of like the reason we do hoard, you know, is because of fear, and it's fear of lack and things like that. And I mean, I just took a whole dumpster full of stuff out of one of our basements here. People kept donating stuff, and my basement became the dumping ground for everything. And I just got so fed up with it, we just pulled a dumpster in and just, you know, sent it all off. But tried to salvage what we could and give away what we could. But, you know, it's just, you know, I'm really into simplifying now. I think it's real important to do that.
Yeah, I have a friend, and she does these pilgrimages. And when they do the pilgrimage, it's not like camping, it's a pilgrimage. But anyway, the only thing they have is what they can carry on their back. And a minimum of weight certainly is preferable to carrying a whole bunch of stuff. But I've attended some of their meetings, some of the gatherings of those who have been on these long pilgrimages and whatnot. And they say the first thing they did when they got back from a pilgrimage like that was they went out and cleaned their garage out. because they realized, you know, what was necessary. And if something wasn't necessary, it simply got rid of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, I've been doing that. A lot of times I just, you know, people come and they see something they like, and I say, just take it. You know, I've got too many of them anyway. So, but you know, going back to this gold thing, now, what I found out, and through some sources I can't talk about, and some we probably can, I don't know, I'll leave that up to you. But there seems to be these different accounts. I know they have the BIC. Is it the BIC?
BIS.
BIS, sorry, the BIS. The Bank of International Settlements, and then you've got the Sagano Trust, and you've got about 10 trusts out there, seems like. And then, you know, the Chinese have their gold, and you know, there's all these different trusts functioning. And when you try to get down to it on what's what, we're finding out that different trusts are doing different things, and that's why there's so much confusion.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a unity. Let me back up a little bit so people understand, you know, what we've gotten to today. Let me just give a real brief history.
Okay.
I can kind of run it back perhaps all the way to King Solomon.
Yeah.
Because he's famous for his gold. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as a result of his desire to perpetuate his bloodline, history says that he had something like 600 wives. I find that hard to believe, because who could put up with 600 mother-in-laws?
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, apparently one of the queens, as it were, he wanted to perpetuate a bloodline through her. And so she went, I'll just use the word Indonesia, because you start talking about Bali and Solo and Java and all those kind of things. People know what you're talking about. So let's just say Indonesia area as it's known today. So she did take a large amount of gold into Indonesia to perpetuate the bloodlines there. And there were, over the centuries, you know, a lot of gold flowed in there for various reasons. Uh-huh. In any event, what they did was they created what I would call a reverse family tree. At that age, I think there were something like 128 what they call royal families. Uh-huh. And I think probably those quote unquote royal families probably was the result of the Anunnaki.
Yeah.
But in any event, these royal families decided to consolidate. So what they did, they started to intermarry, and with the purpose that they were going to finally work their way down until they had one representative to represent them all. Now, what they did was all these royal families consolidated their wealth whether it be in gold or other things, they consolidated them into what we basically call a trust.
Yeah.
And so they eventually intermarried, till we got down to 1900, when they produced one individual who is known as M1, which stands for Monetary One, and that was in 1900. And I think a lot of people are familiar with President Sukarno from Indonesia that helped JFK with some of those operations he was trying to do. Uh-huh. Event, they got down to that M1 that represented all of the royal families. Uh-huh. A bit of confusion about some of the things that happened after that. When you get down into 19 and 20, after World War One, the consensus among the royal families is, hey, we can't have any more of this war going on. And so what they did was they got some, they called experts together to figure out some kind of a plan, hopefully, to prevent some of this business of shooting and killing all across the planet, because it's unproductive. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can you get done if you shoot and kill one another?
Yeah.
So eventually, over a period of time, they came out in 1928. They came out with what was known as the Plan of the Experts, which called for the consolidation not only of the wealth of the royal families, but of all the countries. So what was determined was to start to consolidate the gold. And here we go again with this gold stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In any event, that plan was put out. It was agreed to basically across the planet. And so they started to bring gold into Southeast Asia, like to Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, and all those places, where it was consolidated into a huge pot, if I use that word, which has become known more recently as the collateral accounts. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't realize this, but even though, World War II was on the horizon because of the Treaty of Versailles, everybody knew that was coming. But in any event, even Germany and Japan were bringing bullion down to the Philippines for deposit there under this concept of the Plan of the Experts. Now, the reason for the participation of all the countries would be so that they could use that large amount of gold to underwrite their country's currency as an underwriter, as a surety, because that's just how our commerce works. Mm-hmm. And so in any event, things didn't work out too well with the Treaty of Versailles, so Germany gets in. We got into World War II again. And so in consequence of that, when they finally got all that settled and the bullets stopped flying and whatnot, then in 1945, they set up a commission to implement the Plan of the Experts. And the Plan of the Experts, as it was originally put out, provided for the Federal Reserve System, the United Nations, the Bank of International Settlements, and all these things. These things were all a part of that plan, all of which relied upon the consolidation of the gold that had been going on for some number of years. So as a result of World War II, because so many of the countries had been destroyed, I mean, just blasted apart, they set up certain programs, which we know today is roll programs or trading programs and all these kind of things. And as a result of that, they created huge amounts of money or currency. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now these currencies were known as the heritage funds. But these funds were under treaty. And so anyway, in 1945, the United States, United Kingdom, and France were established as a commission to deal with these things. So those currencies and so forth that had been created to rebuild countries and all these kind of things could be used. But it wasn't too long until, putting those three countries in charge is like putting the fox in the hen house, because all they did was steal it for their own benefit. And none of the countries benefited from those particular programs, and all the countries went into serious debt to rebuild their countries when the money was available, you see. Mm-hmm. So that expedition lasted for about 50 years, and then in 1995, the royal families, or whoever it is thinks controlled the planet, decided on to not recommission that bunch. And so in that stead, they created an entity known as the International Treasury Control, which had responsibility for the collateral accounts, and then tried to clean up or police in some measure the situation. The only problem that the International Treasury Control Organization ran into was the only way they could enforce those things, they had to go to the U.S. Congress.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So here we are again, if people would like to learn a lot about that. If there's a interview that was done with a man named Keith Scott and Ethan Fox. A lot of your listeners are familiar with Ethan.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was about a 2-hour interview. Now, Keith Scott, the reason that they picked him to interview was because he is the chief of the cabinet of the Office of International Treasury Control. So if people would like to know that history or get the particulars on that history, if they'll just go on the YouTube and look for Ethan Fox, Keith Scott interview, it'll pop right up and you can hear that whole history. Keith explains it better than anybody I've ever heard. So
yeah, I know Keith is a good friend of yours, and I've met Keith too, and I think he's a brilliant man. So he's very involved in that situation.
Yeah. But in any event, we've come down to the present time. Back in 2010, actually the sole arbiter or the sole controller of the Office of International Treasury Control, a man known as, and this is not his real name, but a man known as Dr. Ray C. Dam, who is of Cambodian royalty, they tried to assassinate him.
Mm-hmm.
That really threw things into a real turmoil over those things. So there for a long time, everybody's, yelling and screaming about the collateral accounts, and they were going to get gold out of it, and this, that. I mean, this gold stuff, it drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. But in the event, it come down to this, that we were moving into the age of Aquarius, whereas we're moving into the opportunity for many to actually ascend, or whatever you want to call it, into a fifth dimensional frequency. So we're in the age of Aquarius now, the fifth dimension. Opportunity is here now in front of us. So the question gets to be, well, if we're going into the fifth dimension, so that people don't carry karma with them, then it was seen that we needed to fix the financial matrix on the planet. Now, the main mover behind this certainly is an individual and ascended master known as Saint Germain. And I think a lot of your audience are familiar with Saint Germain. In any event, he is, in fact, the I don't know what to call it, the head guy of the Age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. In any event, he's been working for a long time trying to get this financial thing fixed up. And so now we're coming into this last little leg of our journey here. And so the efforts that have been made with the global reset of currencies, the fixing of the financial matrix and all those kind of things are all in place. Now, because people, you know, can't see their way past, you know, the end of their nose or the end of their checkbook or whatever, they get very, very confused about money. And this all this gold stuff that's going on and all these currencies everybody's, you know, worried about and all these kind of things. Listen, folks, if you do redeem those currencies, it will be short-lived. The information that I have and that James kind of put me on to was that we will be a cashless society beginning about 2018. So all this squabbling over RVs and currencies and ZIMs and dinars and all that kind of, don't get into that, man. If it happens, okay. If it don't, you know, so much the better. Because even if all these things happen, it will be short-lived. Because we're moving, you know, this planet is not going to put up with any more of this foolishness. And so what we're involved in here is a correction so that people who do seem to be victims of the karma that they create with all this gold and money and everything, that karma can be released, because you're not going to drag that crap into the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, the program now is like, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins, you know. that's what people are seeming to be running on right now. And even a lot of people that are claiming to be humanitarians, you know, when you really get down to it and you ask them, well, what are you going to do with this money when you get it? You know, very little of it is going to be spent on humanitarian things. You know, it's, you know, the talk is there, but, and even on the highest levels, I know you and I both have been seeing this, humanitarians are fighting over this money and, they claim to be humanitarians, but they're fighting, you know, over the money and who's going to have control, you know, of the money and things like that. So I don't know where the humanitarian fits into that or where unity consciousness fits into that, but I think it's time for a little brutal honesty in this whole program, and let's get really clear with our true motives and intentions and what it's all about.
Yeah, I would think, you know, if people would just go back to the concept, you know, not that I'm going to preach, but go back to the concept that's in the Old and New Testaments about a tithe. Uh-huh. Which is one-tenth of your increase. And rather than think about it in terms of money, think about it in respect to your available time. Now, what uh-huh. could you do in your neighborhood, in your community, if you took one-tenth of your available time and not watch the television, but go out into your communities and so forth and look to see what needs to be done? I mean, I used to go out walking sometime with a friend of mine. I hated to do it because she'd pick up every piece of trash she came upon. And guess who ended up carrying it? Me.
Yeah.
But I had to go out walking with her because if she saw, you know, a wrapper or a cup or a can or something, she would not leave it lay. She had to pick it up, take it home, put it in the trash or whatever. So I just hated to go walking with her because I knew I was going to end up, you know, packing a bunch of stuff home. But uh-huh. but that's what we're talking about here. I mean, yeah. I don't see anybody out here, you know, going checking on their neighbors and stuff. But just take a tenth of your free time. I'm not talking about, you know, the time that you have to work or take care of your business or whatever. But everybody's got free time. Just say, you know, I'm going to take one tenth of the time I'd be watching television or going to the ball game or whatever. And go out here into the community, and it'll catch on.
Now, that's, yeah, I agree.
That's true humanitarian, not money. Money don't create humanitarian. It's the effort and labor of people. And so I would think people would be better served putting their energy and their time and their labor into humanitarian rather than money. Because, like you say, I've listened to all this humanitarian stuff for so long, it don't work. I
mean, we have a joke here. You know, if vegetarians eat vegetables, what do humanitarians eat? You know, and we've seen that. We've seen them just eat up, you know, eat up people right and left. But, you know, it's sad, you know, and I don't want to be a downer on this stuff, but I mean, it's time for a little brutal honesty. And it's time for us to really look hard at our motives and intentions. And, you know, I'm not trying to brag, but, you know, my life is about 99% humanitarian stuff. And yeah. if I have 1% free time to do something else, that's awesome, which I really don't get. And I'm changing that around right now because it's really out of balance. But yeah. For 30 years, like eating, drinking, and sleeping, you know, service and spirit and things like that, it's after a while you start to figure things out a bit. But anyway, I know now, but you know what I was thinking about too with the global reset and everything else, just giving you time to be creative. I mean, my whole drive is to bring these free energy devices out and the healing technologies, yeah, and get them out into the public. And that's been one of my main things because, you know, you're not really going to connect to spirit if you're sick and you're ill and you're hungry, you know. So let's get the basics done first. But I know there's a lot of, you know, villages in Mexico that don't even have a bathroom. I mean, they don't even have a well.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we should be thinking about that, you know, before we buy that Mercedes or that new beach house or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can all take a look, you know, at our own lives, do a little bit of introspection and say, you know, what could I do? And start small, you know, start small in your neighborhood or in your communities, or you go visit, you know, you don't know how much old people appreciate people visiting the rest homes and stuff. I mean, we used to go out, you know, play music with them, you know, do different things. And they appreciate that. So you don't have to look very far in your communities to find some good thing, some good deed that you could do that would be truly humanitarian.
Yeah, we have an abundance of apples here and plums and things like that. And so a lot of times, eggs too, a lot of times. And so we'll try to find homes for them, you know, whenever we can. But,
oh, yeah,
you know, I notice how appreciative people are when you bring a box of plums over and say, you know, help yourself. Yeah. You know, but just basic things like that, you know. And the thing about nature too, you know, you plant a few trees, you're going to have apples and plums coming out of your ears. I mean, that's the way nature works. Mm-hmm. And so I really don't know why we have a lack of anything right now when you really look at the way nature functions.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a amateur psychologist, if I can go into some of that, I think that really one of the major problems that people suffer with and why they act the way they do and get into all these crazy circumstances is because it's the fear of death. And that is, uh-huh, they don't know what's going to happen when they die. And that fear actually dictates the way a lot of people carry on in this life. And I think if people would, you know, come to grips or do a little bit of research, talk to different ones, you know, that perhaps have died and come back. I know you had an experience like that. A lot of, uh-huh, people have. And you know, people, you know, if they were just convinced that even in the death of the body, they live on. Mm-hmm. A lot of this hoarding and worrying about money and worrying about gold and all these crazy things, those things would be put into their proper perspective. But because people live in fear of what they don't know, I think that causes a lot of the problems that we face here.
Yeah, I agree. I know after my near-death experience, had a drowning and a few other things happened, but after that experience, I came back and I just went, well, whenever I have a problem, I go, what's the worst case scenario? I could die. Well, that wasn't so bad. So what's left, you know? And it really puts things back into perspective, you know? And You know, shoot, you can always, I mean, we're in an abundant planet right now. You can always have food, you know, you can get shelter and things like that if you want to get out and do something about it, you know. But I think one of the big problems we have right now is this sense of entitlement. And in a way, I understand it, because we really have the resources for everybody to have food and shelter and hot water and, you know, the basics. I mean, it's there. You know, the resources are there for everybody on the planet to have that, you know. But, you know, the people that just have these expectations and they want everybody else to do it for them and provide everything for them, I think is, you know, there's a whole generation, it seems like, around that. And I've never seen anything like it. And you're expected to work your butt off, you know, and grow all the food and everything else, and then they just come and eat it, you know. And you're going, well, you know, here's a hoe, you know, here's a rake, here's some seeds, you know, there's a spot right over there. You want to grow some stuff, you know, you want to help out with these gardens, we can all eat together, you know. But you know, it's like they go, well, it's free, you know, God is free. And I just said, well, you know, God didn't come down here and dig these ditches, you know, and put the pipelines in and put the seed in the ground, you know. So, but it's kind of funny, that whole program.
You know, I had an opportunity to talk to my parents. Both my parents lived through what's called the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So I asked my mother, I said, what was it like to live through the Great Depression? And she said, well, we didn't know there was one. They lived on the farm. She said, we didn't have money, but they had everything else they needed. And what was interesting was a lot of the hobos or homeless people that was coming through the countryside, you know, they'd always feed everybody. But the key to it was that those who came asking for food were always willing to work for it.
Yeah.
If they chopped wood, if they pulled weeds or whatever, you know, none of them would come looking for a handout. They come looking for a meal, and they was willing to work for it, to have it. And I think maybe that kind of attitude has changed over the time and so forth. Like you talk about this entitlement kind of thing, but no, seemed like our attitude and stuff has changed over the years. Certainly from my mother's generation, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's going to have to shift too as well. You know, and I have mixed feelings about that. Well, maybe these people, you know, incarnate from a civilization where everything was provided, and that's just the program that they're running, you know, and they don't understand why it's not there. But unfortunately, you know, this is Earth in this time, and Earth's evolution and where she's at right now, or the people are at, is, you know, we all got to pull our weight, you know, and do our part.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, going back to this goal, I know we've been jumping around and everything. I know from the sources, both spiritual sources and some other sources, it does look like things are going to finally break around Christmas. Is that the same information you're getting?
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus. You know, indications are is that we're coming to a tip-off point. Like I say, if the indications are that we'll be a cashless society by 2018, that means that, you know, certain things has to happen. So, I think Christmas or the first of the year is going to be a significant time.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's kind of weird, because I know that this is a process, and the people involved in this whole thing are processing on every level.
Yeah.
Even the highest levels where people are, you know, there to release this gold and, you know, set it off towards humanitarian funds and things like that. I mean, they're going through their process, which they're going to have to back up and look at too. And you know, when I was meditating with Babaji, he said one of the last things we have to conquer is the need to control.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what's happening on every level.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be the case. But you know, by and large, you know, I'm very much encouraged about the things that are happening, because like I say, you know, if you're sick, you know, and you have a fever, when that fever breaks, then you feel ever so much better. And so I think we're getting to the point now that the fever is just about ready to break. And I think folks are going to start feeling a whole lot better.
Yeah, I agree. And I know what's funny with me is there was a time in my life, I think before, you know, I had the near-death experience and things like that, when, you know, I was in commercial real estate, and I was always like worried about money and worried about this and worried about that. And after those other experiences happened, I don't worry anymore about it. I don't even care about it. And it comes to me anyway. It comes effortlessly. Yeah. And I always have what I need, you know, but I live very simply, but it's always there. And I think it is a matter of consciousness and getting rid of the fear and the lack consciousness. And also, you know, on the highest levels, those guys need to go through their process and get out of this fear and lack and trying to slave through dependency. And that seems to be what's happening.
I believe so. Yeah, that's what I kind of see. Like I say, I think this pimple is about ready to pop. I think, mm-hmm. I think we've gotten all the way to the end of the fever now. And when that fever breaks, I think we're going to see a whole change in attitude.
And it does feel like that. And I know all the planetary alignments and the psychics and everybody are all saying something really big is coming around the corner. And you know, there may be some chaos attached to it, but eventually it's going to turn out good.
Yeah.
And that's what I see. There's purposeful good in everything. So, again, you know, I'm just seeing this is a process and we're all processing. Everybody's processing. And even on the highest levels, they're processing. And I think that the energies that are coming in are pushing things in that direction on the higher dimensional energies, just like the sun owes its existence to another dimension. It's like this movement owes its existence to a higher dimension, and that dimension is pressing in very hard. And it's just a matter of time before this shifts, you know, and we get out of this lack, you know, tyranny program.
Yep. Yeah, I believe so. So everybody out there, get over your gold fever and go out and get along the highway.
yeah, get over your dinar and Zim fever. And yeah, because I've heard so many different stories, and they're all conflicting before, and now it's coming to a head, and now it's all kind of congealing, and a lot of the conflicts are going away, and we are getting a clear picture on where things are going. And you know, it looks really good from my perspective, you know, and right. I don't think anybody can stop this. And those that are trying to stop this or hold up the process are having an experience, you know, and sometimes it's not a good one, you know, but it's what they need, I guess. They're that old story, you know, that old song, you can't always get what you want, but you get what you need. I think that's what we're going through right now.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it's pretty undeniable. So we just got a few minutes left. Is there any parting words you want to give to the audience? I know it'd be good to give out your website or how people can get in touch with the work that you're doing.
Oh, if they just go on the internet, look up Winston Shrout Solutions in Commerce, or just the acronym of WSSIC.com, it'll pop up. I've been doing this had this Solutions in Commerce thing going for about 12 years now. And my goodness, the improvement that I've seen in people, the attitude of people, the self-confidence, you know, that they get from, you know, just a little bit of knowledge and understanding is ever so beneficial. So that's what I've been doing over the years, is trying to help people with some of these situations, so forth. So yeah, you can go find that on the internet.
Great. Yeah. And well, keep up the great work. And I know, there's more information as we get through this, we can divulge about some of the people we're working with and what's unfolding right now. And, I know we were talking earlier about that, and as far as our participation, a lot of the stuff and what's been going down, I don't think that's ever going to get out there. But nobody would believe it anyway. But who knows? You know, it's just getting more and more interesting.
Yeah, it is.
like the Chinese proverb, you know, may you live in interesting times, you know, and it's we are in those interesting times. But anyway, we're hitting the end of the hour, so we've got to sign off. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and explaining some of this. And hopefully we can get some clarity on which trust is doing what and when, and get the details down to a science here pretty quick. But I think it's all unfolding, and I don't think anybody knows. We're just going to have to let it unfold and let the cards play out.
Yep.
And then we'll know. we'll be Captain Hindsight, you know, and tell everybody after it happens. Yeah. But anyway, again, thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. We've got to sign off now, folks. We're hitting the end of the hour, but one thing I really want to stress is, you know, stay in the heart, you know, start helping each other out, work together, and watch the skies. A major activity in the skies, the higher dimensional beings, they have their ships and they're playing a part in this. And forget about the mainstream news, the fake news, the real fake news. I mean, it's so ridiculous what's going on. I think you need to just kind of shut your TVs off and forget about it. I think something like 90% of the people have. Nobody's believing them anymore anyway. So anyway, just tap into the heart and feel what's right for you and just go from there. Lead yourself. Good night.